This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're going to have, I think you'll find, a fascinating discussion. We're going to be discussing the recent Supreme Court decisions in the California Proposition 8 case and also the Federal Defense of Marriage Act case, NDOMA case. My guests are Paul Thorndahl, certified specialist in family law. He's a partner in the San Francisco law firm of Wald and Thorndahl. Kathy Sakamura, family law director and supervising attorney for the National Center for Lesbian Rights. Amy Cunninghis, a party in one of the DOMA cases. And Myron Moskowitz, constitutional law professor, Golden Gate University School of Law. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar of California. Additional funding is provided by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, the Trusts and Estates Section of the State Bar, and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Paul, I wonder if you would do this. Could you briefly kind of let us know what the court decided with respect to Prop 8?
All right.
Aside from deciding we don't want to deal with the merits of this case, we just want to deal with standing?
All right. Well, I feel it is kind of a trick question because...
Yes, I meant it to be a trick question.
The Supreme Court Prop 8 decision, which effectively returned marriage to California, didn't really discuss Prop 8. It didn't say anything about a right or lack thereof for same-sex couples to marry. It was a standing decision. And standing is a principle that says the courts of this country are here to decide specific controversies that exist between parties, and someone has to have the legal standing to come into court and make an argument. And in this case, well, first, as a general matter, the general public, although affected by a law, who is not specifically affected by the law in a way to their detriment and has been damaged, does not have standing to just come in and say this law is unconstitutional. So in this case, the trial court judge in San Francisco found Proposition 8 after a trial to be unconstitutional. The Attorney General and Governor of California said, we're not going to defend this law on appeal. We don't believe it's constitutional. At that point, the proponents of Prop 8 were allowed to step in to the Ninth Circuit and argue against what the trial court judge did. When they lost at the Ninth Circuit, petitioned to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court came back and said the proponents of the initiative are, once the law passed, they are merely general members of the public. They have no particular harm flowing from this decision, and we find that they lack standing to defend this law. So effectively, it returned this case back to the district court decision, which found that Prop 8 was unconstitutional on its face and enjoined the state from enforcing it.
In your opinion, as a very experienced family law attorney, does this mean that this decision, going back to the decision of District Court Judge Vaughn Walker, really affects only two couples, four persons, or does it go beyond that?
I think it goes beyond that.
Do you?
I think the state was a party. The state was a party to those. The state was enjoined in that lawsuit. The state, I believe, it was found unconstitutional on its face. There was a full trial on the merits. I believe that this goes to everyone. I think that as it stands, the order that was ultimately finalized and held to be the final order enjoined the state from enforcing Prop 8.
So that would, in your opinion, apply that any gay couple or any lesbian couple is entitled to the benefit of the decision, the Prop 8 decision, on the district court level?
Correct. And more importantly than what I think, that is also what our governor and our Attorney General thing.
Our governor, of course, Jerry Brown, who was the Attorney General at the time, who didn't want to defend, of course, the Prop 8.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Myron, what comments do you first have in response to what Paul just said? Then I'd like you to talk a little bit about DOMA.
Yeah. I think
come a little
what Paul
closer
just said is very questionable. There's another general principle of law that says only parties to a lawsuit are bound by the result in the lawsuit. Now, the parties to the lawsuit were the two couples. It was not a class action, so the starting point is only they get the benefit of the opinion. And the defendants in the case were the state of California and the governor. Marriage licenses are issued not by the governor, not by the state, but by elected county clerks. Mm-hmm. None of them were parties to the case. This all could have easily been resolved had this been filed as a class action for all gay couples and all 58 county clerks been joined as defendants. Now, if the attorney general at the time, Jerry Brown, had represented the state, the case would have gone up on appeal. And appellate decisions, although technically they bind only the parties the same way, they have precedential effect. Mm-hmm. So they affect any other case. So if the Ninth Circuit decision had stood, if the Supreme Court had ruled on the merits, that would have been the end of the matter. But all we're left with is a single district court opinion, a single judge ruling on two plaintiffs and the state. And if some county clerk tomorrow says, I think Prop 8 is valid, I'm not paying any attention to the governor, take me to court. I've never had a day in court. I'm entitled to it. He might win. I don't know. It's kind of a mess. As a practical matter, may not be, because some gay couple who wants to get married can say, I don't have to bother with that clerk. I'll go to San Francisco or L.A. So the issue may never come up, but it's unfortunate that it was left in this kind of a muddle when, to my mind, it was easy to fix. And I don't know why the plaintiff's attorneys didn't fix it.
Do you agree with the majority, U.S. Supreme Court majority opinion, that this was a standing issue, or do you feel that they just wanted to try to avoid this and duck out on the simple way?
Oh, the latter. I think it came up as a standing issue, but I think the Supreme Court got it totally wrong.
Mm-hmm. You think Justice Kennedy in his dissent was the right decision?
Absolutely. I mean, he put it very well. He said, I mean, the whole point of the standing doctrine is to get someone in court who cares about arguing for a certain point of view and want to win. The court gets the benefit of that advocacy. And who would you rather have? A weak-kneed attorney general who doesn't want to argue the position, or the proponents of Prop 8 who really want to win. It didn't make any sense. And I think what the majority was doing was revealed by the very first line in Chief Justice Roberts' opinion, where he says there's an ongoing political debate on gay marriage, which says to me, that's democracy in action. That's where the issue should be fought out, and not in court, and we don't want to deal with it. Now, he didn't come out and say what I just said, but
do you think that's what he was thinking?
I think that's what he's thinking, yeah.
Let me ask you to do this. Would you very briefly do a little summary of the DOMA case, the U.S. versus Windsor, Edie Windsor, whose partner died, and the federal taxing authority would actually taxed her, what, an additional $180,000 because she...
$360,000. $360,000.
Thank you for correcting me on that. But she's supposed to get her money back, is that right?
Yeah. With interest.
With interest. Good. I'm glad to hear it.
Because you got to pay your tax before you can sue to get it back. So they've had the use of her money for quite a while.
So briefly summarize it, will you, Myron?
Okay. DOMA, D-O-M-A, stands for Defense of Marriage Act, which Congress enacted. And it basically provides that the federal definition of marriage is between a man and a woman, all right? And that's it just sounds like a semantic question, but it's not. It's a money question because there's over 1,000 federal laws that give certain benefits to married people that other people don't get. So there's big money involved, tax money, Social Security money, veterans benefits, all sorts of things, over 1,000 of these laws. So the problem is if... a gay couple gets married in a state which recognizes gay marriage, they don't get these federal benefits. So this was challenged under the federal constitution, and a majority of the Supreme Court held that DOMA was unconstitutional.
Does this mean, in terms of the Supreme Court's decision, that these thousands of different monetary provisions that have applied to the benefit of of heterosexual married couples will now apply to lesbian or gay couples who are married?
If they're properly married in a state
in
that
a particular
it.
State. If, right. if the state doesn't permit same-sex marriage, then they're out.
They don't get it. That's right. Okay. This case does not deal with state laws that deal with
Kathy,
gay marriage.
Kathy's shaking her head the wrong way.
No, I just wanted to. This is Kathy from the National Center for Lesbian Rights. I just wanted to say that it is a little bit more complicated in terms of what federal benefits people will actually get because it is based on the particular benefit. Even for people who live in states that don't recognize their marriage, if they were validly married in a state that allowed them to do that, there are some federal benefits that they will get from the government. The benefit by benefit is mm-hmm. how the question has to be answered. There are some federal benefits that are clearly given to people based on whether they are validly married, no matter where they live. And there are some that look at where you live. And then there are some where that's an open question. And there are a lot of agencies that haven't yet said what they're going to do. So we don't yet know how many federal benefits people who live in states that don't recognize their marriages will get, but they'll definitely get some.
Kathy, do you see further litigation over this?
Certainly, I think there may be, although I do think that agencies are acting and the Obama administration has indicated that they, you know, are urging agencies to act to fully implement the Windsor decision and that, you know, where it is possible that that mm-hmm. be broadly interpreted to apply to anybody who married validly in the place where they married, regardless of where they live.
Myron, any other comments on
Doma? Yeah, let me explain the basis for the opinion, which some of our listeners might want to know. It's a little bit hard to figure out, but I think it runs something like this. The Supreme Court has already held that sexual preference is not a suspect class, which means they're not going to look at these laws very strictly as they do when you have a racial classification, something like that. So they apply what's called the rational basis test, and which usually means they'll uphold it because it's not hard to find a rational basis for almost any law. But in this case, they said an intent by the government to harm people is not a rational basis. And that was the intent here.
Mm-hmm.
So the intent of these members of both houses of Congress who voted for it, the majority says, was to harm and humiliate gays because of their sexual preference. That's disclosed by the title, Defense mm-hmm. of Marriage. Mm-hmm. It's disclosed by some of the comments that some congresspeople made. And also, we just can't think of any other possible reason.
Now, the majority, the justice who wrote the majority opinion is which? Which justice?
It was Kennedy.
It was Kennedy.
Yeah.
Anthony
yeah.
Kennedy.
Now,
okay.
there's some dissents in the case, Scalia and Alito and Roberts, who rather vigorously disagree with that characterization of the legislation. They say it's not right to accuse all these legislators of being bigots and hateful. There are other possible rationales for this, such as some uniformity in distribution of federal benefits to avoid the kind of problem that Kathy mentioned, where you have someone married validly in one state moving to another state. Congress might have felt, just to deal with that problem, we're going to essentially pass the buck to the states. Mm-hmm. Once they legalize, they all legalize it, maybe we'll change. But right now, we're just sticking with the traditional definition of marriage. So that's what the fight it was about in the mm-hmm. Supreme Court. But the as I mentioned, the side that felt this was intended to hurt gays won, and they knocked it out basically as an equal protection of the laws
mm-hmm.
matter.
Mm-hmm. Under the Fifth Amendment?
Fifth Amendment, it's complicated. Fifth Amendment does not have an equal protection clause, mm-hmm. but it has a due process clause that incorporates equal protection principles.
So that gets really complicated.
We don't need to get into that.
All right, we're not going to go into that. Amy, you were one of the plaintiffs, one of the parties in one of the DOMA cases that was filed before one of the federal judges in San Francisco. Give us a little background on what you and your spouse were confronted with, because you and your spouse had married You were married
in
San Francisco?
Yes.
So tell us a little bit, will you?
So my spouse is Karen Galinsky. We've been together for 23 years, and we were married in August of 2008. During that period when same-sex marriage was legal in California before Prop 8 passed. And shortly after our marriage, Karen went and tried to add me to her family health insurance benefits. She is a federal employee, was already paying for the family plan to cover our son, but because of DOMA, we were not allowed to, I was not allowed to be added to that.
Your son was, but
yes.
You were not.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And quite frankly, it was really galling because she had worked for the federal government at that point for about 18 years. And a heterosexual married employee on his or her first day of employment could walk in and add his or her spouse at that point and any number of children for the same rate that Karen was paying to cover herself and our son, but couldn't add me. Mm-hmm. And I had to purchase private insurance because my employment does not provide benefits. And so we decided to fight this initially through the Ninth Circuit's Employee Dispute Resolution Program, because the Ninth Circuit actually, where Karen works, has a sexual orientation anti-discrimination policy. We had a few administrative hearings. We kept winning, and yet we kept getting refused in terms of the government saying, no, we cannot add you to Karen's health insurance because of DOMA. Mm-hmm. So we then filed a federal lawsuit. And over the last almost 5 years, this process has been working its way up. We ended up in district court in San Francisco and had a wonderful, favorable ruling by Judge White, in which he ruled DOMA unconstitutional. And at that point, it was about a little over a year ago, I was actually added to Karen's health insurance because there was no one stayed the decision, and I was the only same-sex spouse of a federal employee actually receiving benefits.
In what, the Ninth Circuit or in the state of California?
In the entire country.
The United States.
Yes.
The entire United States. Yes. Oh, my goodness.
And I felt very lucky because, coincidentally, it happened just around my 50th birthday. And, you know, my health insurance premiums were going up. And health insurance is important as you get older. Nevertheless, our case was appealed. The decision was appealed.
By whom? The federal agency?
By both the Department of Justice and by BLAG. And the professor did not talk about BLAG, and I'm not going to explain
right.
BLAG.
Don't explain BLAG.
But they were fighting us
and
opposing it, and they appealed. And then the decision was also appealed to the Supreme Court, and along with several other DOMA mm-hmm. cases. And then the Supreme Court chose to hear the Windsor case, and we were thrilled by both the case and, of course, by the decision, because it now means that I will not have my benefits taken away. And again, as we get older, I have the full coverage that same-sex married couples take for granted in terms of, you know, pension and Social Security, retirement benefits, all the over 1,000 benefits that come with being married and having your marriage recognized by the federal government. And mm-hmm. without responsibilities, too. We know mm-hmm. that we'll pay more in federal taxes as a married couple, but we are happy to do that because mm-hmm. we're now recognized. Our marriage means the same thing as marriages between people of opposite sex.
Let me throw this out to you. What about domestic partners who are not married? How does DOMA deal with this, if at all, Kathy?
Yeah, definitely. So it's not necessarily clear exactly how it's going to impact registered domestic partners or in states that have civil unions, people who are in civil unions. It doesn't address those people's unions or partnerships. The federal government the various agencies can issue guidance, of course, addressing those questions, and in some cases they have already. So the Office of Personnel Management, which is the agency that administers and determines the benefits for federal employees, for instance, has said that registered domestic partners and civil union spouses are not going to get spousal benefits if they are mm-hmm. Unioned with a federal employee, mm-hmm. but all married spouses will. Mm-hmm. But many agencies have not yet said what they're going to do. It is, again, unfortunately, a complicated question. It just depends on the benefit. for instance, for Social Security purposes and Medicare purposes, the definition of spouse may encompass registered domestic partners just because of the way that it's worded. Mm-hmm. But again, we are waiting for the Social Security Administration to say, you know, how they are going to be treating people.
And do they indicate when they are going to come out with this?
No, but it's likely to happen in the near future. They have, mm-hmm. you know, already said that they are holding applications and are they're working mm-hmm. on the guidance. We would expect it to happen, you know, certainly in the next couple of months. Certainly, every agency has an obligation to fully recognize same-sex married couples that live in states that respect their marriages.
I just wanted to add on that point. Some states are dealing with their spousal equivalent relationships in different ways. Some now are phasing out domestic partnership or civil unions to transform all of those existing relationships into marriages mm-hmm. by state law mm-hmm. that'll deal with that. In California right now, I think that is not really on the table. They're going to maintain these dual track domestic partnership and marriages. So really the answer to people listening who are in domestic partnerships but want spousal benefits on a federal level is go get married.
Go get married. Okay. Are there any county clerks who are saying we in California, we are not going to go along with permitting marriages in this county between same-sex partners? So anybody said that yet?
Not right now, to my knowledge, and to actually disagree with the professor's position, one of the parties were the state of California was a party, and I believe the state of California, to my understanding, could remove from office a county clerk who refused to comply with state law at this point.
Yeah, but what's state law? State law is Prop 8. That's the problem.
That the full state and all state officials have been enjoined from enforcing.
Do you agree with that, Myron?
Yeah, they've been enjoined from enforcing it as to four people.
That's not the way the injunction reads. Yeah,
I agree with you, but he doesn't have the authority to issue an injunction.
Unfortunately, for that position, yeah. is... finding is final. And even if someone else came in and tried to say, okay, I am a new person now withstanding who has an interest in not issuing these, they're going to encounter problems with the legal principle of collateral estoppel that says we don't retry issues mm-hmm. that have already been fully determined on the merits.
Yeah. And
there's another principle that says
you don't
bind people that weren't a party. I sue you, Paul. Judge enjoins you. And somehow it applies to Chuck, who never got his day in court.
I don't think that's a fair...
We have a due process clause that prevents that.
That's not a fair comparison because I'm not the state of California, and this lawsuit you filed against me is not seeking to declare that some law I am enforcing is unconstitutional on its face as it applies to everyone. And that's mm-hmm. what an on-its-face challenge means, and that's what happened in this lawsuit. So I agree with you that there is a door cracked open for people to try and make arguments, but I think they're going to face a very difficult road. And what we're seeing practically in the meantime is California's marrying same-sex couples.
Okay. Well, there's another reason I think you're ultimately right, and Justice Scalia raised this in his dissent in Windsor. Windsor does not directly apply to state marriage laws, but the reasoning of the case does. I mean, there's no question that
if
based on the evidence they had, they find that Congress intended only to harm gays by excluding them from these laws, you pretty much have to say that about any state that won't give a marriage license to gays. It's kind of inevitable. Scalia said the handwriting's on the wall, and I think he's right.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Kathy.
This is Kathy. That's fine, from the National Center for Lesbian Rights. I absolutely agree, and I think that actually the level of scrutiny that the court in Windsor applied is not just rational basis, that they were really putting a higher standard on it by saying that this the only possible purpose of having a law like this is animus and is to intentionally discriminate against same-sex couples mm-hmm. and on the basis of sexual orientation.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think that is absolutely true, and I totally agree with the professor that this does inevitably mean that the state laws that are prohibiting same-sex couples from marrying also would violate equal protection mm-hmm. under the federal constitution.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So in the DOMA case, the court concluded that there was a violation of equal protection.
Sort of.
Sort of, yeah. That sounds like a lawyer's answer, doesn't it?
Well, it's not my fault.
I know it's not.
It's kind of a mess.
I know it's not your fault. And in the dissent, Justice Anthony Kennedy's dissent in the Prop 8 case, he's talking about the court should have taken on the merits of the case
Absolutely.
And not the standing.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's really quite remarkable. Yeah. We are getting close to the end of the statewide version of the program. For those of you who are listening to us live, whether it's in the Bay Area or on the Internet at www.klw.org, we will be taking your calls in just a couple of minutes. I would like to let you know that on July 24th, we will have our regular Call a Lawyer night where you'll have a chance to talk with one of several attorneys, whether they're certified specialists in various areas of the law or in areas of landlord-tenant or taxes or whatever. They will be here, and I want to give you the number so that you can think about doing this if you like, if you have a problem, and that'll be in 2 weeks, 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. In finishing the statewide version of the program, I have a long question here. Let me see. I've got about 1 minute, and I'm not sure that I can do it. To say it is going to take too long. So let me do this. We'll do it in the second half hour of the program. And I just want to let you all know that I have a terrific panel here. Paul Thorndahl, certified specialist in family law. Kathy Sakamura, family law director and supervising attorney for the National Center for Lesbian Rights. Amy Cunninghiss, a party in one of the DOMA cases. And Myron Moskowitz, constitutional law professor, Golden Gate University School of Law. And for those of you who want to ask some questions, we'll be taking those in just a couple of minutes. All right. It is right now about 7:27 and a half at 91.7, your local public radio station. This is KALW in San Francisco. Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. I want you to feel, if you do have a question in the area of discrimination, in the area of same-sex couples, if you have questions about either or both of these two Supreme Court decisions that were only decided, within the last 2 weeks? Something like that.
Yeah.
It's only 2 weeks ago, I think. The Prop 8 case and the Defense of Marriage, Federal Defense of Marriage Act case, that's the DOMA case. Please join us with your questions, your comments, your insights, if you would like. It's 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. If you are in a same-sex relationship with your partner and you have some question about this, your relationship, whether it's you're married or domestic partner under California, the Domestic Partner Act, please join us with your questions. For those of you who are interested in learning something about a conservatorship, tomorrow at the San Mateo County Law Library, there will be a presentation on conservatorships, what it means, who it applies to, et cetera, et cetera. Actually, certified specialist Colleen McAvoy, she's a certified specialist in estate planning. She's been on this program several times. And her co-presenter, Melissa Carlston, will provide an overview of what you can expect. It's tomorrow. That's Thursday, July 11th at noon, and that is at 710 Hamilton Street in Redwood City, right across from the Hall of Justice in Redwood City, San Mateo County Hall of Justice. If you'd like more information, it's 650-363-4913, 650-363-4913. It is something that you're invited to come to, no charge. Bring your sack lunch. I think you may find it very enjoyable. All right, so let's take a call as soon as we can. For those of you who are facing some real serious creditors' problems, if you're being haunted, harassed by a creditor, next week we're going to be doing a program on bankruptcy law. the debtors' and creditors' rights and obligations. My guest will be certified specialist Leon Bayer, who's been incredibly generous with his time, both as a guest on this program and also for Call a Lawyer. So if you're into that, if you're confronted with that, that's what we're doing next week. So who do we have, Martin, that we want to start with in terms of taking some calls? We'll find that out in a minute. I want to read to you the question that was brought into the studio. Doesn't the Supreme Court's decision on standing in the Prop 8 case make for potentially bad law? For example, if California voters pass an initiative to strengthen environmental protections, the initiative gets challenged by Chevron, a reactionary governor can refuse to defend the initiative and thus torpedo it. It seems unfair that the will of the people via the initiative process can be single-handedly undone by a governor who doesn't agree with the initiative. What comments do you have, Myron, on this one?
I think I wrote that.
Did you?
Yeah.
I didn't see you write it, but I think
exactly
you were thinking
my position. Yeah. I mean, there's one slight mistake. It wouldn't be the governor. It would be the attorney general who represents the state of California. But, yeah, I think what happened here was the net result for I'm happy with. I think Judge Walker was right, and I think denying gays a marriage license, denies equal protection, is morally wrong. But nevertheless, I think what happened to the electorate is disgraceful. I mean, 7 million people in California voted for Prop 8, and essentially they didn't get proper representation in court.
Mm-hmm.
The governor wouldn't do it, Schwarzenegger. Attorney General Jerry Brown then wouldn't do it, even though he took an oath of office to enforce California laws. He wouldn't do it. And Judge Walker allowed the proponents to do it, of Prop 8, but the Supreme Court held that they don't have standing. They're not proper parties.
The majority did, although Justice Kennedy said that there was standing.
Yeah, the majority, they set the law. So,
I
mean, the net result is these people basically go unrepresented in the place where it counts the most, the courts of appeal and the Supreme Court. And in a case like this, people deserve to be represented and have their arguments aired. And that didn't happen in this case. And as the questioner notes, next time the shoe could be on the other foot. It could be an initiative passed to help the environment, and you got a conservative AG who won't defend it, and the people don't get represented.
Of course.
That's not democracy. That's not the way democracy is supposed to work. It's not the way our legal system is supposed to work in giving everybody the right to a lawyer.
Paul, please.
I was just thinking, of course, shortly after Attorney General Brown refused to defend this law, he did come before the voters again, and they punished him by promoting him to governor. I mean, I agree. There are potential.
That makes him right?
I'm not saying it makes it right. But what I'm saying is these people are elected officials. These initiatives can go a lot of different ways. And this is hardly a usual situation where the top law enforcement officer of the state says, I conclude this is an unconstitutional law. What if the voters pass a law saying they want segregation in the schools or they want to deny things to prisoners that have been found to be constitutional rights of prisoners? And the state says, wait a minute, I don't think that's a constitutional law. At some point, we can find abuses potentially on either side of this.
I disagree. I mean, lawyers represent clients all the time where the client is wrong. They represent mass murderers. That doesn't mean you agree with mass murder. It means the person's entitled to a defense. When the voters are wrong, they're entitled to a defense too. Now, a lawyer can't handle a frivolous case, but this one wasn't frivolous. Brown might have won the case in the Supreme Court. So you can't pick and choose when your client is wrong or not. You run for office to defend the state. You defend the state no matter what they do, pretty much.
Let's move on to something else. Let's move on to something. Liz, thank you for waiting. Maybe we have your question or comment.
Yes, first of all, I want to say I am very much pro-gay marriage, but I am afraid that I must agree with this business about not being represented by the governor and the attorney general. But my real point is there are also heterosexual domestic partners, and one of the reasons they get married, they get domestic partnered rather than married, is to avoid certain federal penalties having to do with pensions and retirement and this, that, and the other thing. So I just wanted to bring that up. It is not the case that the only domestic partners are same-sex domestic partners. There are opposite-sex domestic partners as well.
Well, okay, Liz. Thank you very much for your comments. Keep listening.
Well, I actually
go ahead, Paul.
I think that's a really important point to make, and I thank the caller for saying that, because it's one of the reasons that California is not going the route that some other jurisdictions are talking about of just deeming all of their spousal equivalent relationships to be marriage under law. There are opposite sex senior couples who are in domestic partnerships who specifically did not want to marry because of federal rights, and California at this point is not making any move to get rid of those. And
can you give us an example of a federal right where someone who is a heterosexual domestic partner will take advantage or be able to, by not being married, take advantage of a particular situation? Can you give us just a simple example?
My example, and maybe Kathy can correct me if I am wrong, someone receiving a survivor benefit, a Social Security survivor benefit, they won't lose that if they register as a domestic partner with someone else, that they would lose it if they married someone else. Is that correct?
I mean, I do think that was true before, because of DOMA, the Social Security Administration was not recognizing registered domestic partners. But for that particular example, I do think that the definition of a spouse under Social Security includes someone who would inherit under state law as a spouse. Mm-hmm. And so that may no longer be true, but we don't yet know. There may be other reasons, though, why people might have registered and don't want to have certain rights and obligations that might come from various other federal benefits that people might have decided that they didn't want to marry because of the legal implications of doing that. And we do think that it should be – people should have that choice.
Medi-Cal rights.
The Medi-Cal. Okay. What would the Medi-Cal rights be? What would the difference be whether you are a domestic partner or married?
So the way that your income is calculated – for Medi-Cal purposes does vary based on whether you're married or single, and often it is more beneficial to be single than to be married for purposes of getting Medi-Cal if one spouse is a lower earner.
Well, because the person who's getting the Medi-Cal rights is typically disabled. They're unable to work.
Okay.
There's a huge difference if their working spouse is counted toward their income for qualifying for this benefit.
Yes. Yeah, very, very good. Okay, well, very good. All right, Steve, welcome to your legal rights.
Great program. So my father and uncle lived down in Florida on a golf course, and they were the only non-spousal household out of about 300. And they were not, my uncle was not allowed to make tea times, whereas in every other household, the husband and wife both were able to make tea times. They had to threaten that they were going to get married, and they threatened to sue their homeowners association. They actually acquiesced in the special board meeting and allowed them then to both make the tea times. And I was just going through some papers of his, and I found that. So I feel that they kind of set the way for this gay marriage stuff.
Well,
I think that's an excellent point, though, that is brought up. Do you think the state of California shot itself in the foot by not defending this? And contrast that with DOMA, where they did bring a defense.
Go ahead. Myron, please.
If Jerry Brown thought he was doing a favor to gays by not defending, he got it wrong, I think. I think if he had defended, case would have gone up to the Supreme Court, and they would have forced him to deal with the merits. And I think there were 5 votes there to knock out Prop 8.
On a constitutional basis.
Yeah, on
not
the merits. On the merits.
Yeah, on the
merits.
That's
right.
Yeah.
But the Obama administration stopped defending DOMA as well, and a subgroup of the House of Representatives had to step in and defend the law, because the Obama administration, in sort of a parallel process to what was going on in the state of California, felt that the law was unconstitutional.
And I do,
Kathy.
Yeah, I mean, and I do think that I do respectfully disagree with the law professor about this. Is, you know, that there is a point at which there is a level of unconstitutionalness of a law, if a law does violate the federal constitution, that there's a point at which the state can decide that that is indefensible, and particularly where it is the right of a minority group that is experiencing discrimination or oppression. When it comes, this is not the first time that the state has decided not to defend a law because it was unconstitutional. Mm-hmm. There was a previous case in California where the voters enacted a law that allowed racial discrimination in housing to continue, mm-hmm. and the state refused to defend that as violating the United States Constitution, and that there is a point at which I think it is permissible for the state to do that.
I don't think there's ever that point. The foundation of our country is democracy. Allowing courts to veto democracy is an extraordinary power. Mm-hmm. It's not even written in the Constitution. It had to be implied into it by the Supreme Court in the Marbury case. It's extraordinary. And before we allow 9 unelected people or any judge to knock out a law enacted by the voters, the voters are entitled to representation. Mm-hmm. All right? And if the Attorney General doesn't want to represent the state when that happens, don't run for the office. Don't mm-hmm. take the oath. Mm-hmm. Do something else with your life.
Okay. All right.
That's why this is a very interesting case. And also, could your guest talk about the way that the Windsor case was brought up? There was a couple other ones that were kind of filtering around, and I think Supreme Court kind of looks to pick the specific cases that they want.
Steve, let me see if I can do this.
Which ones do they expect for next year?
All right. We're going to move on, Steve.
Yep.
Thank you very much for calling.
I can just answer that very briefly.
Go ahead, if you will.
The story I heard was it centered around Justice Kagan, who was the Solicitor General, when a lot of these cases were coming up, and she would be disqualified from almost all of them. And mm-hmm. for some reason, I forget, she was not disqualified in Windsor, so they took that one.
That's
interesting. To get her to be able to vote on the merits.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so there you are, Steve. That's the answer we have for you. All right, this is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing a program talking about the most recent, very serious and significant cases of the U.S. Supreme Court involving the Prop 8 case, California Proposition 8 case, and the Federal Defense of Marriage Act DOMA case. My guests are Paul Thorndahl, pardon me, Paul, Certified Specialist in Family Law, Kathy Sakamura, Family Law Director and Supervising Attorney for the National Center for Lesbian Rights, Amy Cunninghis, a party in one of the DOMA cases, and Myron Moskowitz, Constitutional Law Professor, Golden Gate University School of Law. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The Bar Association of San Francisco's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. This is a public service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. For a referral to a lawyer, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. This information is brought to you by the Bar Association of San Francisco and KALW listeners like you. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own at 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. You should be able to speak to a human being. They'll set you up for an appointment with an attorney who's experienced in the area. Depending on the county, for a half an hour consultation, it could be a low of $25, maybe a high of $35. It does not go to the attorney. It goes to the Bar Association to keep the program of lawyer referral going. All right. We have right now, let's see, the number, by the way, and we do have a few more minutes going, 1-415-841-4134, and we have Will. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Very interesting program.
Thank you.
I am appalled when democracy has been taken away from the people by 9 Supreme Court judges. And as a matter of fact, I'm glad that it was not all 9 of them that voted to turn down Prop 8. I am a resident of California, an immigrant from Africa, and it bleeds my heart to see that same-sex marriage promoters believe that it is all right for the rest of the human race or people in the U.S. to just accept the fact that 2 people of the same sex get married, and it's okay. Well, My comment is simple. It is all right if they have a relationship. But when they try to get married, like the women and my wife are married, I feel it's an infringement on the cause of marriage. It is defined as a union between opposite sex. And there is nothing. It would take any amount of Supreme Court judges to get all the people to accept and believe that same-sex marriage is all right. It is not. It is definitely not.
Okay, well, all right. We're going to move on, Will. Thank you very much for your comments. Anyone want to comment on Will's comments?
I would like to make a comment about this, and I was thinking about it when Amy was telling her story. I think the reason that these DOMA challenges have been so successful, like across the places they've been brought, is that they demonstrate so starkly the discrimination. You know, that caller I fully respect. He doesn't want to enter a marriage with a man. No one is asking him to enter a marriage with a man. Mm-hmm. And he is entitled to his views about that. But my marrying a man doesn't affect him. And these cases, Amy's case, Edie Windsor's case, they demonstrated so clearly the discrimination. Edie Windsor went in there with a case where it was undisputed, had she been married to a man, she wouldn't have paid any tax. Yet she was legally married to a woman in the exact same procedure in a place that allowed it. And because the person she married was a woman, she was taxed $360,000. Mm-hmm. I've had clients who, because of DOMA in the course of their divorces, have paid millions of dollars in taxes that they would not have had to pay if they were a heterosexual couple.
Let me ask you this on that issue. Do these people have standing now to request that they be reimbursed for these excessive taxes that they paid in light of the Windsor case?
I think they would need to talk to a tax expert.
Okay.
But it is my understanding that people can seek, they can amend their returns going back 3 years. There's
okay.
a three-year statute
All right.
of limitations.
Yes.
Someone else who wanted to challenge those laws would have had to pay the tax and file a lawsuit mm-hmm. the same way Edie Windsor did.
Yes.
Or they didn't. They gave up their right to do it, except going back 3 years.
I have a comment on this caller. It's a question. Would you read into his comments a subtext that says, I hate gays. I want to hurt gays. And the reason I ask that question is what he said was pretty much what Congress said, and a majority of the Supreme Court read into what Congress said exactly that.
Mm-hmm.
I hate gays.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you heard from this man?
I would say that many people would say that, yes.
I don't think he would say that.
I don't think he would say,
I believe in traditional marriage. I don't even think about gays. I don't know.
Yeah.
But that's really the hard question, I think. Someone like that who just says what he said, and that's all. Mm-hmm. He never uses the words, I hate mm-hmm. gays. Mm-hmm. Is that what you read into it? I think it's a hard question.
Very interesting.
That was a problem for the Prop 8 proponents in the trial, though.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, come forward and articulate some reason that demonstrate for us in some way how allowing same-sex couples to get married is going to hurt anybody else.
Yeah.
Because the people who are wanting to enter their same-sex marriage, we've got all kinds of stories for you of how it's hurting us to not be able to do it.
Mm-hmm. All right. All right, let's go. William, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello. I'm going to preface my question with a confession that I consider myself to be relatively illiterate with regard to the law. But what I don't understand is why all these myriad of benefits are conferred upon couples of any sexual persuasion and not on individuals, for instance.
Oh, that's a good point.
For instance, if I want to designate I'm a single man with no dependents. If I want to designate my Social Security benefits after I'm dead that I've been paying for 40 years to some individual who I'm not married to, why shouldn't I be able to do that?
That's a very interesting thought.
And is
Kathy,
that going to be the next, the next civil right?
Maybe it will. Maybe it will. Let's get some comments for you, William. Thank you very much for that thought. Kathy?
Definitely. I mean, I think the rights of unmarried people are also important for to continue to be considered. And we also work on those issues that, you know, it is important for same-sex married people to get all of the same rights that different sex married people get. But it's also important for people who are not married to have rights as well. Right now, the way that the law is set up is that there are a number of benefits that are reserved for married people. And we think that many of those also should be available to people who aren't married as well.
So you see some litigation coming up in the not-too-distant future on this?
There already are. I mean, there already are, you know, various reasons why people have brought cases and have been successful or not successful, depending on the situation, that there are times where people are not married, but they should be able to get certain benefits as to each other.
Myron, what do you think of that idea?
Well,
from a constitutional law professor's standpoint.
It kind of gets to the heart of the fight in the Supreme Court. Someone like Alito or Scalia would say, look, there's a value in society in having tradition. And marriage is a tradition, giving special benefits to married people, without getting into the gay issue, just the one we're talking about, single versus married. And democracy ought to be allowed to give those special benefits based on tradition, and the court shouldn't interfere.
Then if you take that approach, though, Myron, and talk about tradition, traditionally heterosexual marriage has been the tradition.
No, I know. I understand that. But we're now and that's what Scalia says, too, that that the court should respect society's choices when it comes to these traditions. Now, the one justice who was on the other end of that scale was Brennan, who said basically anything goes. I mean, people can have all sorts of relationships, and the court should mandate that democracy respect those various relationships. So it's an ongoing fight that's been going on for a long time.
Certainly
it's not restricted
to this. Kathy, go ahead.
And there's not, you know, it's not just a question of cases. You know, the legislature, the people can also act to give benefits more broadly to people and not to limit those. And that has also happened as well. People are recognizing that people live more complex lives, and we should be providing people with the protections that make sense for the most people to have the most protections.
But this is the reason why Justice Roberts said in a very serious sentence, let's leave this to the democratic process, because, as Kathy says, it's being fought out now, and the trend is toward more recognition of these various arrangements.
Paul?
I was just going to add on this, the comment of the caller. I think it does raise important questions, and I've certainly had my moments in the last several years of thinking, why is the government in this business of singling out this type of relationship at all, when all the arguments against it seem to be religious arguments? But I wanted to just emphasize, we keep talking about rights and benefits. There are also obligations that go with marriage. And when a couple comes together and marries and says essentially to the state, we are an economic unit, you know, I as a married man now under the federal, there's what's called a marriage penalty. I pay taxes at a higher rate than under the single tables. My spouse and I, our incomes will count toward the other if one of us becomes disabled and we're trying to get benefits. We're essentially saying we are going to step in and undertake this role of responsibility for this other person in a way that a single person doesn't. So there is a basis for some of these things, and I don't have the answer to these questions.
And I don't think anybody does.
Right.
These are very, very complex questions. Ken, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, thank you.
Hi.
First, I wanted to thank you all for being here and for, you know, getting this dialogue out in the public. I wanted to make a point about the argument that 7 million people's votes were overridden in, you know, California for overturning Prop 8, which we have to remember was passed in 2008. And what we're not hearing is that 7 million votes represents 52% of the vote. And I think 5 years later, things have changed. And I think we have President Obama to thank for that, you know, with his leadership about embracing gay rights. And I want to point out that this repetition of the 7 million is neglecting to mention the percentage of the vote. So thank you all for being there.
So let me get this clear if I can, Ken. You're saying in 2008, the total number of voters at that
who
time
voted.
There were 14 million, or not quite 14 million. Is that what you're saying?
Of the people who voted for the measure, 52% were in favor of the measure. So it passed. So that was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think that's a pretty close, you know, 52%. Well, I think that majority has shifted, primarily, you know, in the African-American community and due to President Obama's leadership on the issue. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your comments.
Sure. Okay.
All right. We have about 3 minutes left at this point. Can you give us some projection of what you see coming up in the near future? By that, I mean the next year or two. Kathy, do you have some thoughts?
Sure. I mean, I do think that we really have to focus on the fact that in most states, same-sex couples still can't marry and still are not recognized as being married, even if they are validly married. And now we have a really stark divide between states like California, where same-sex couples get treated as being married for all purposes, and most states where they have virtually no recognition at all. Mm-hmm. And that we really are going to see a lot more focus on get these states and having same-sex couples be able to marry in these states. And it matters to people in California whether that happens. When you travel to see your family in Texas, you're not recognized as being married. You don't have those rights. A lot of things can happen to you in that time. And it matters to all of us whether or not same-sex couples are recognized as being married in every state.
So is it fair to say that you all agree that with respect to the decision in the Prop 8 case, that only affects, at most, people in California as opposed to across the United States?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
Except with respect to standing.
And on Myron's evaluation, it really only affects 4 persons, 2 couples. Is that right?
Legally, I think that there's an argument for that. Yeah, as a practical matter, obviously, it's going beyond that.
Oh, sure, yeah. Sure. I think I would agree with that. Any other? We have about 1 minute. Any other comment that you would like to make? Anyone here?
I'll make one comment.
Please.
I think it would be better for everybody, maybe especially gay couples, that if this trend of changes through the democratic process continues. I mean, more and more states are allowing gay marriage, mm-hmm. which shows an acceptance of gay marriage. I think that's a lot better for everybody, for the whole country, than to have courts cram this down people's throats when they don't want it. You know, it's a good trend.
So take the right that you have to vote very seriously and vote.
Well,
is that what
yeah,
you're saying?
And I hope people vote more sensibly than they
too.
Did on Prop 8.
I do too. Yeah, I do too. I do too. All right. Well, I want to thank you very much for joining us on the program. It's been a great pleasure to have you here, Paul.
Thank
and
you.
Kathy and Amy. Say hello to your spouse for me, by the way, although I haven't met her, but I know it's been quite a fight for you and your spouse. And Myron? Very nice to have you back.
Nice to be here, Chuck.
Give your little kid, your two-year-old little kid, a hug for me, will you?
Ari.
Ari. Ari, is that his name?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And by the way, next week, in case you are being hounded by creditors, if you think you have any rights as a debtor, we'll talk about that next week. We're going to be talking about bankruptcy law. A very great supporter of this program, certified specialist Leon Bayer, will come up here from Los Angeles to be in the studio with me. So we're going to be talking about the rights and obligations of debtors and creditors in the area of bankruptcy law. So join us next week for Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We'll be right back.